Studios. Sports Radio 610 presents In the Loop with John Lopez and Reggie Atitula.
Oh, yeah, you're in the loop. Sports Radio 610. John Lopez, Figgy Fig, and myself, Reginald Atitula, hanging out with you on a Thursday as we prepare for a Sunday game versus the Vikings for your Texans. It's going to pose a very interesting challenge, and there's no better person to talk to on this show than our guy, Andy Kalu, who joins us every Thursday. Andy, what's happening, my man?
What's good, brothers? How are y'all doing today?
Fantastic.
Doing very, very well. And I would like to jump into some of the nonsense that we have done, but I'm super intrigued by the prospect or the challenge that this Brian Flores defense poses. And it seems like no matter who you ask, when you talk about like smart football folks, they have something that fascinates them about the way that Flores runs defense. What is that thing for you, Andy?
Damn, I like nonsense, but all right, let's get right into football.
Oh, no, I'm just backsiding the nonsense. That's all it is. I'm just going to put it on the backside.
You know what? I mean, here's the thing, and I respect coaches and coordinators, and I know Brian Flores is a big name when it comes to the defensive side of the ball in the NFL, but when I look at the team, what I like about the Minnesota defense are the guys that they acquired. They weren't the biggest names, but they are, you know, names that are proven. Like, shoot, two of them came from Houston, Jonathan Grenard, Blake Cashman. I've been a huge Blake Cashman guy, for those who don't know, middle linebacker for Minnesota. He was with the Texans, but I remember when he was with the Jets. And the only reason things didn't work out for Cashman with the Jets, it was just injuries. Getting those injuries at the wrong time of the year, so he never really had a chance to prove himself. And he did it when he was with the Texans. I just really like that the defensive side of the ball with what Brian Flores is doing, but the players that he has. I mean, Jonathan Grenard, we saw what he could do last year. Blake Cashman, Stephon Gilmore, you know, arguably one of the best DBs to play in the last 10 years. Then you have guys that, unless you really follow football, you don't know about them, but Harrison Phillips up front, I mean, that's a solid defensive tackle. Ivan Pace is like Blake Cashman, just a tackling machine. So I really like the individuals they have on this team and the way they constructed the defense.
You mentioned Stephon Gilmore, and that's what intrigues me. I was digging in on this game yesterday afternoon and this morning, and I came across they have 41 years of experience in their secondary.
Wow.
41 years. Stephon Gilmore, I think 13. Harrison Smith, 13. The other guys have 5 or 6. And that, to me, told me one thing, and we might dig into it later, but I want to get your opinion on this. They've seen everything. Like they have seen everything from opposing. They played against Tom Brady. I mean, they've seen everything. And that is what's intriguing to me, is Bobby Slowick and C.J. Stroud versus that kind of secondary.
No, that's awesome. I didn't even think about the experience. But like you mentioned, with Stephon Gilmore, Harrison Phillips, and what he can, you know, what he's done over the years, already has a pick on the season. And when you talk about defensive backs, when you talk about guys that still have it physically and they have that type of experience, John, we're not going to see too many MEs. You know, we're not going to see too many missed assignments or mental errors. And that's, I'm not going to say it's half the battle, but that's 25-30% of the battle, especially for defensive backs, making sure they're in the right place at the right time. And like you mentioned, I mean, when you've played multiple seasons and multiple games against Tom Brady, when you play with him in Stephon Gilmore's case and practice against him all training camp, like, you know all the nuances, you know all the ins and outs. I mean, is the defense perfect? No. They look very good against San Francisco, but that is concerning when you have those type of veterans in the backfield, defensive backfield.
I will say, you bring up that experience, all I hear is, hey, man, it's old legs. Let these young boys run.
Yeah, they ain't playing old. That's for dang sure.
But with that being the case, I will say, that's all fine and good. The thing that it has been, concerning for me is the injury report for this Texas team that's really jumped up in a way that I did not expect this early, especially with how healthy they came into the season. What are you more worried about, the Joe Mixon situation or the center situation, Andy?
I would say the center, and this is not obviously. You know, when you're on sports talk radio, because there's that small percentage of idiots that'll take something you say and try to run with it. So I do have to say the proverbial, this is not a shot at Joe Mixon. But when I look at an offensive team, when I look at a team on the offensive side of the ball, I personally believe the offensive line is the most important group on an entire football team, because Cam Akers, he showed he could run that rock. You know, when you put the ball in his hands, if you give him a small hole, he's going to make something happen. but who's giving those holes? Who's creating those holes? It's the guys up front. So that's why my concern is more with the center and the cohesiveness of the offensive line. We've seen the story before here in Houston over the last few years. We just haven't had seen consistency with the same offensive line group playing together. So if I had to pick, obviously I am concerned because we saw what Joe Mixon could do, you know, early on in the season, but I got to go with injuries to the guys up front.
And then on the defensive side for the Texans, what I wanted to ask you about, Kamari Lassiter and Derek Stingley, obviously making a lot of plays, playing the ball very well. What does that allow D'Amico Ryans to do? Because we saw him, he's been a different D'Amico Ryans. He doesn't travel the cornerback very often, and yet he did against Cleveland last year and then again this past Sunday. He doesn't blitz a lot, and yet he did. Is that something that we're going to see more of because those cornerbacks can do what they're doing?
Yeah, when they play the way that they played, it allows you to blitz. But then on the flip side, it has you talking out of both sides of your mouth because then you say, oh, I don't have to blitz. I can let my guys up front eat because I know Kamari Lassiter, Stingley, they're going to be covering the wide receiver. They're going to do a good job covering and blanketing the wide receiver. So we don't have to send in everybody. And it allows your defensive line. No one loves a great corner more than a edge rusher. You know, Danielle Hunter, Will Anderson, you want that extra half a second to get to that quarterback. And when you have these, I'm not ready to say two lockdown corners, but when you have the potential of two lockdown corners, it definitely makes your job easier up front.
We're talking to former Houston Texas ND Kyle Lou right here on In the Loop Sports Radio 610. And ND, I've been trying to get a handle on how real this Sam Darnold resurgence actually is. I mean, he's a dude who was highly regarded out of the draft, but he has bounced around and has had some rough times. First couple of weeks with the Vikings have been pretty stellar, and I've seen people on either side of this. Where do you fall looking at how Sam Darnold has played early on in the season and how real and sustainable it is?
Man, that's a great question because I'm overly optimistic when I look at individuals and when I try to predict what they're going to do. Like when I see Sam Darnold, I see a top five pick. I can't remember. It was either three or four. You know, a top five pick was headed towards Busville with the New York Jets. Then he has somewhat of a resurgence. And now in your first two games, four touchdowns, two interceptions, I believe, when I was looking over the stats. You know, I just see a guy that's seen it all, similar to the defensive backs we talked about. There isn't going to be anything that phases him because mentally they've already said, oh, this was a horrible pick. But yet he just keeps grinding and he keeps getting opportunities. And it's only two games in, but he's looked pretty good in these first two games. So I see, at the best, a seasoned vet who you're not going to get in his head because he's already experienced on the field the worst of the worst, but there's still a reason why you go number three or four and you're still not with your original team, 6 years later. So it's up to the defense of the Texans, to kind of expose what made Sam Darnold bounce around. But here's the thing, and I know I'm kind of going all over the place with that question. I would not be surprised if he goes out there and has a good game, but on the flip side, I wouldn't be surprised if we say, oh, yeah, that's why, you know, he's with his third team, however many years. It's just such a crapshoot with guys like his talent, similar to what we're seeing with Baker Mayfield. I mean, you know, high pick, bounced around, and now he's playing the way everyone expected him to play when he was drafted.
I got to ask you this. It's trending number one in sports nationally, and that is C.J. Stroud chatting with Caleb Williams after the game Sunday night. And Caleb seemed a little bit, you can describe it how you want, whether it's dismissive or just angry or didn't want a second of it. What's your take on that from a player's perspective and what CJ was talking about with him? I'm assuming you've seen it.
I don't know if.
Well, just the fact that people are going back and forth on CJ shouldn't have done that. They're peers. And then the other side is saying, no, man, he was trying to help him. You heard the exchange. I'm just curious what your thought was on that.
Wow. I didn't realize people were saying he shouldn't have done that. Like when I saw and heard it, I was thinking, yep, that's the leader. He's not just a leader for the Houston Texans. He's an ambassador for the NFL. Because, and correct me if I'm wrong, the clip that I saw, he was telling Caleb Williams, you're going to be great in this league, trying to help him out. So hold on. Y'all have to explain to me, why would anybody say that wasn't, he shouldn't have done
people
that? Like,
was,
what am I missing?
People were saying he was trying to little bro him.
Yeah, they said he was trying to act like he was big broing.
And they the same age, so he shouldn't give any advice.
And I was like, he is better. I'm like, he is better than him. He is more mature. He has accomplished more. Figure, do you have the audio? Let's play this, and you can see what people are saying about him.
Good job out there, bro.
Yeah,
hey,
keep going.
Stop taking those hits.
Yeah, I know.
Hey,
yeah.
Learn from those mistakes, and everything that you got, bro, is in you already, bro. You're going to be a hell of a player in this league.
Yeah.
All right, boy.
Appreciate it.
For sure.
So what's wrong?
How in the freaking world can somebody say something? You know what? That's the problem. I'm not one of these people that are like, oh, I'm not on social media because I'm better than you. Like, social media will get you in a dark place. Like, how can you hear that and then listen or read comments of people like saying something negative about that? Look, I don't care if they're the same age. As far as experience, CJ Stroud has a year of experience over Caleb Williams. CJ Stroud has been through it for a year. So for him to say, you know, to try to encourage him, man, like when I heard that, and that's the clip I heard, John, but I thought like, was there something else said when you said that other people were saying something negative about it? Like, no, like to me, that goes to show that CJ Stroud's not just worried about being a leader for the Texans, but to be an ambassador for this great game, to like uplift, you know, another quarterback who's struggling right now. And I don't even know if Caleb Williams is struggling as much as the team around him, because I don't know about y'all, but there was one or two plays, like literally one or two plays, where I was like, oh, like, yeah, that's the talented guy that, you know, we saw at USC and Oklahoma.
Yeah, Indy, what you got to remember is that it is kind of social media, and it gets the people going. It is just topic of conversation for the day, and we can all go around it. Now, one of the things I hypothesize within this is that maybe that was just a ain't nobody trying to hear it moment, you know, where you're like, yeah, I heard you. I know, because you're trying to keep pushing. One thing I will ask, do you recall yourself having those kind of moments at any time, whether it's with the parents or whatever, where you're just like, yeah, I don't really even want to hear this right now.
That's more with my wife not wanting to hear something. But you know what? All jokes aside, like anytime now, obviously, you know, it's not going to be as big of a name as CJ Stroud. But after games, when people will come up to me like, hey, man, you had a good game, or hey, you know, I remember you, keep it up, or, you know, just keep grinding and things are going to work out your way. Like, I would hear that after games. I remember one year when I was in Washington backing up Bruce Smith, and the year before that, I had what I thought was a good season. So I thought, okay, now I'm going to really get my shot. Then they're like, hold my beer. We just signed Bruce Smith. So, and I'll never forget, and I won't say the player's name, but after the game, he came up to me. He was like, man, I saw what you did last year. I'm sure you're upset right now, but just keep grinding. Like, and that meant the world to me. So I would be shocked if Caleb Williams didn't appreciate it. Now, I'm glad Caleb Williams looked upset, because I'm still not used to all this. After a game, after a loss, you're smiling and you're swapping jerseys and, you know, you're putting stuff on social media like, oh, we didn't get this one, but we'll get the next one just for the likes. Like, I don't like that. So I like that Caleb Williams looked upset. But if anybody, and I hope nobody in that studio that I'm talking to right now had anything negative to say about what CJ Stroud had to say to Caleb Williams. And maybe I missed it. Yeah, now I'm going to have to go back and rewatch it.
No, you didn't.
Nah, I think I'd probably be the closest one in saying that, you know, sometimes people just not trying to hear it.
Yeah, that was about the extent of it there. Hey, Andy, we promised some nonsense.
So, that's right.
As you well know, in this business, you got to pay off the tease. So we were talking about meals when we were young and maybe poor, or maybe your family just trying to stretch a dollar, that are, you know, kind of poor people meals or whatever.
I don't know what you're doing there. We were just talking about the meals that your mom used to make that kind of took you, that takes you back.
I don't know
why he had to add a classism element to this.
Like I said, my mom used to make a pot of beans every day just to stretch it and feed all the kids. And for lunch, sometimes she would cut up some hot dogs, and that would be our lunch, hot dogs and pinto beans, you know, or cinnamon toast with sugar and butter was our dessert and all that. Do you have any meals like you still crave, even though, you know, you can, you're pretty much going to own all of Houston within a couple of years?
You know, so growing up, and it wasn't a financial issue, but every day my mom just either made rice and stew or fufu with, you know, what we call the ground rice and soup. So those are two Nigerian dishes. But at the time, I was like, God, dog, can't you make something else? Because it was literally every single day.
Yep.
Then I went off to college. I went off to the league. And now I crave it. Every Sunday, I can't can't wait to get to her house. But as far as when times were rough, two things. So when we were in college and we're all putting our money together to try to make meals, and I think 90% of people who've been to college, ramen noodles was huge, even back in the mid to late 90s. But we would really get creative. I mean, we would put eggs in it. We would put, we'll chop up bologna, fry the bologna, that in the ramen noodles. And that tastes very good. And then the other thing, and you know what, shout out, free plug, and again, this is college when we're all broke, but Timmy Chan's was a meal, and you never knew what you were going to get. Sometimes you would have to spend 20 minutes picking the feathers out because they didn't pick them all the way out, and other times it'll be, you know, just right. But those are the, you know, those are the meals that even if I was a billionaire, I would still try to figure out a way to get those to me.
I knew you would deliver, and I knew it was going to be rice and stew because it's all of us.
Oh, yeah.
It's all of us. John, you're right. Like, you heard me kind of laying some of the groundwork for the idea of, hey, man, you just kind of get tired of it, but then eventually you're like, actually, I need that.
Yeah.
I was on that same path.
Now I'm looking for a reason because my parents, thank God, they only live 5 minutes from me. So I'm always stopping by, looking in their fridge to see if they have leftovers, right? Right.
And the best part about it is I'm sure your mom is excited to keep doing it, isn't she?
Oh, and that, look, my son, who's at Baylor right now, he asked her, hey, can you make me some rice and we'll freeze it and dad will bring it up. When I say that she made enough for the entire team, she was so excited. he's going to be eating good for the next month or so.
You love to see it. And I mean, hopefully the Texans eat good on Sunday versus the Vikings. ND Kalu joins us every Thursday out of the goodness of his heart. And we appreciate you doing that, my man.
Oh, it's fun for me. I look forward to speaking with y'all next week.
There he is. That's our guy, ND Kalu, joining us on the phone here in the Loop. Sports Radio 610, man. Rice and stew, man. I got some stew in the fridge right now.
Oh, baby.
That my aunt made for me. That is one of those places for sure. All right, man. Coming up next, let's go around the NFL where, of course, Kyemi Fairbairn got to get a little bit of bling. But then also, we got some Hall of Fame situations going on. Who is the potential to be added into the Hall of Fame in the next class? And which Texans might be in there? We'll talk about it next.
Let's go around the NFL in the Loop style.
Why are you smiling?
Because I love football.
Brought to you by Quick Assist. Here's John Lopez and Reggie Adetula.
I'm going to tell you all about how much fun you're going to have this season.
On Houston Sports Leader, Sports Radio 610.
All right, let's go around the NFL here in Loop. And I mentioned this in the tease. Obviously, Kyemi Fairbairn had a fantastic week again as knocked down 4 field goals, 3 of them 50-plus yards, allowed him to become the first kicker in NFL history to have multiple games, 50-plus yard, 3 50-plus yard kicks in their career, and he did it in back-to-back weeks. There's just a lot of accolades that you can heap upon Kyemi Fairbairn, which also then led him to being the special teams player of the week in the AFC. Also, and maybe more importantly, Texans player of the week, which came with a very nice addition, which is, if you're familiar, the Texans chain. This is what it sounded like when he was given it.
Well, Joe wore it last week, right?
He did.
Jeez, it's pretty heavy. Like, this is serious. I never had anything like this before. Lay. This one I feel more comfortable in. Gotta keep it going.
There you go. So he got the big H-Town chain.
And a Halea.
And then they also gave him a lay.
That was a great touch. That was a great touch to do that for him. The other thing, that chain's going to be a thing, I guess, huh? I mean, I want it. It's legit. I mean, it is like big time. That's like a goal for all of them to get a piece of that.
I'm always amazed at the things like that. Like, I mean, obviously college football did it in a big way. We saw it start with the turnover chain and really go all over the place. It's incredible how an incentive like that, you imagine, you're like, it's kind of hokey or whatever, but when they buy in, people buy in real strong, and we've seen that especially in football.
Well, you know when it's hokey, and I don't think this one is. I think they really, really legit love that.
And I mean, it's not like they didn't spend good money on
That's what I'm saying. It's legit.
They spent real good money on that thing. Like he said, it's got some weight to it. And of course, I think it matches the weight of the performance that Kyemi Fairbairn gave for your Texans in the victory on Sunday night. All right, some other things that are happening around the NFL. If you ever needed to remember that Jim Harbaugh, there we go, got it right. Jim Harbaugh, consummate weirdo, right? He's absolutely one of our football weirdos, and weirdos in a way that is beloved, but weirdo nonetheless. Well, Joey Bosa gave us a little bit of insight into just how much of a weirdo he is in this respect. Or at least I'll ask you. I guess I'll put it up for a vote if you believe him to be a weirdo. According to Joey Bosa, Jim Harbaugh has put in place some unusual new rules in order to ensure that Justin Herbert remains in condition, right? In good condition, rather. He said that Herbert is not allowed to give his teammates high fives when he's coming off the field in order to protect his hands.
Come on, bro. What are we doing?
Protecting his hands. I just
no,
said
we're not.
Mm-hmm.
No, we're not.
Apparently, people are just out there giving too hard of high fives. We got to make sure that Justin Herbert is fine.
Is this like we all think he's a lovable kook? Like you,
that is correct.
Like you laid out.
I mean, he loves drinking milk.
Yep.
His recruiting visits when he was at Michigan were definitely something to talk about because those were very odd. I think at one point he was like in a treehouse with a punter or something. Like he's just an odd dude.
But this is silly. It's a high five, man. It's football.
I mean, Justin Herbert, he broke his index finger and he missed the last four games.
He's better now. Did you hear what he said about like Moses? I'm always going to lean on my staff.
That's a bar.
That's a direct quote from Jim Harbaugh.
That's a bar. I didn't know Jim Harbaugh had bars like that.
I can't stand that dude, man.
Oh, well, yeah. You have ulterior motives here.
Him and his damn brother. I can't stand.
Oh, you don't like John neither?
Nah. Okay.
Like Moses, I'm always going to lean on my staff.
But you can admit that's a bar, though,
that's,
right?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, they do have some cool parents. I like the parents.
Yes, yeah. The parents are good. But yeah, that all like those things are universal. But yeah. An additional level of protection for his quarterback by saying, hey, don't none of y'all high five the quarterback. You see the red jersey on, you can't hit him or you can't high five him.
Get out of here with that nonsense.
Some other things happening around the NFL. The Pro Football Hall of Fame has announced 165 modern era player nominees for the 2025 class. Now, of course, if you're unfamiliar, this is how the process goes. They start with the big pool that are available for the Hall of Fame, and they whittle it down over time until we know who's in the Hall of Fame. Obviously, last class, you got to see a Houston Texans legend and icon become the first Houston Texan enshrined in the Hall of Fame, and that was Andre Johnson. You fellas were there for the occasion. Within this new class, there's a few guys that have joined the pool that in their first year of eligibility.
Brace yourself.
Travis Frederick, Ryan Khalil, Joel Staley, and Marshall Yanda. Those are the guys that are the new guys. And then there's some guys who are finding themselves on. Oh, sorry. No, those guys are. Yeah, the first year of eligibility. Also, Eli Manning.
There we go. That's
Marshawn
the one I
Lynch.
Said. That's
it's
the one I
Eli
said.
Eli Elite.
Brace yourself, people.
It's Eli Elite. Is he a Hall of Famer?
Oh, Lord.
Marshawn, Darren Sproles, Demaryius Thomas, Vernon Davis, Delanie Walker, Luke Kuechly, Terrell Suggs, Antoine Bethea, Aqib Talib, Earl Thomas, and Adam Vinatieri. They're all on the list for the first time.
All right, cool story there.
All right, do you want to do in or not? Because I think the thing.
Oh, Marshawn's in. Vinatieri's in.
Yeah.
Eli
is in, man. I hate to say it, but Eli's in.
This is where we go.
He should not be, but he will be.
He is for his last name.
Okay, are we doing what I said? Brace
yourself. He's in for the Super Bowls.
Okay. I don't disagree, but just brace yourself.
This is the bracing.
This Eli discussion is going to multiply times 10.
No, this is the bracing.
I agree with you.
This is the bracing. It's just accepted. He's going in. He shouldn't be. We don't like. We can have that discussion if you want to. Yeah. I just want to make it abundantly clear to our fine listeners.
Dude.
Go ahead and be ready for him to get in, even though I don't think he should be.
Why he's getting in, though.
Well, the Super Bowl.
It's the Super Bowls.
Yeah.
I understand, like,
and
the Manning name.
And the last name.
And the last name.
But, I mean, you can't deny he had crazy runs to the Super Bowls with those teams, right?
Yeah.
However, like,
let's talk about his stats. See, here we go. We're doing it. No,
I'm done.
I'm just saying between now and I think it's the Friday before the Super Bowl when they announce the actual class, it's going to be obnoxious how much Eli is he a Hall of Famer discussion.
Especially with him being in media and like having that additional visibility outside of already being on the Giants. That's another thing, is like being on a team with a large media market and a large fan base. That's
the other thing
is
going to get him
things.
In New York.
I was going to say that and him actually being at ESPN, just being in the media right now.
Yeah.
Like, it's no way in hell he won't get in. That would be a travesty at this point.
Oh, it's a travesty now.
At that point, like, that dog is on. He's on TV every Monday night.
Like,
man.
I said, I should have braced myself because here we are. So I'm scrolling through the list, and two names jumped out.
Okay,
Eli, for the obvious reasons. And Shane Lechler.
Shane Lechler is the potential number two Texan to go in.
He should be in the Hall of Fame.
Oh, let's go. Go ahead and lay out the case.
No. Shane Lechler is the greatest punter the NFL has ever seen.
Break them punts down, man.
Since Ray Guy.
Who is the only other punter, yes. Or the only punter, rather, in the Hall of Fame.
Shane Lechler was a weapon. I hope someday I could state the case for these... For the Hall of Fame voters, which is a silly process, but I'm not going to go there just yet. Shane Lechler is a Hall of Fame punter. I mean, period. There is no question about it. So those were the two names that jumped out. Outside of, you know, the ones that I know are going to get in, like I said, Marshawn, Vinatieri. That was another one that I think is a lock. Is it...
Of the new ones that it came through?
Yeah.
Is it Keekly or Suggs?
Keekly
was a monster.
Yeah, he's in.
I always remember there was when he was in Carolina, there was a Spanish radio call of Luke Keekly, I think, getting an interception and started running back. It is Luke! It is Keekly! It just always makes me happy. But yeah, so that we'll keep an eye on that process as it continues. But the very first step has happened of seeing the 167 player pool. That's available to look at if you wanted to go.
And now the text board and YouTube and Twitch is all about
doing the Eli Manning thing. I'm telling you, we don't.
It's Eli Elite.
Yeah.
713-572-4162.
Oh, man. I could see this coming a mile away.
From a quarterback that again, brace yourself, will go in the Hall of Fame, to one that is looking like he's having a really tough case early on in his career. Bryce Young for the Panthers. Dave Canales is the head coach of the Carolina Panthers, said to the media that the Panthers are not considering trading Bryce Young to kind of put...
Oh, really?
To try and dead the conversations that popped up as to whether, after he was benched, like what places he could land at if the Panthers were willing
so
to trade
Dave
him.
So Dave Canales is saying that they're not considering
that
trading Bryce Young.
That is right.
What did he say Sunday? Refresh my memory.
I believe that he said that Bryce was indeed their starter, and they just needed to fix some other things, and they were going to work hard.
Okay. So the same guy that said Bryce is a starter only for a few hours later for him not to be the starter
Correct.
Is saying that they will not trade Bryce Young. I just wanted to get straight on that. They're going to listen to trade offers. They're not doing their job if they don't. They're not doing it's a dereliction of duty if they don't listen to trade offers for Bryce Young.
Unless they're in a place where they just felt like, hey, man, he's not capable of starting at this moment, but if we step back and give him an opportunity to develop in the ways that we should, rebuild
but you still listen.
He can come back around. Okay.
Yeah.
I guess that's fair. The idea of listening versus actually looking at the actionable trade that you could execute.
Yeah, and if you're listening, you're saying there's a chance.
Apparently, with in the division, Will Levis, the quarterback of the Titans, with the level of anger that swelled up, even with his head coach after some rough play from him, he's had to make some moves as he's gotten a lot of. A lot of negative vibes, not just on social media, but apparently his phone number was leaked, and that prompted a lot of unwanted messages from angry fans who were criticizing the play where, he basically bowled the ball to the other team. He said, quote, I don't know how my number got out there with the fans, but I got a lot of texts. That'll be nice to shut that part out and put it behind me. I haven't opened social in the last couple of weeks. I just think that that's the healthiest way to go about it. So he actually had to change his number in order to get away from some of the vitriol.
You also often hear, like, the worst people in the world. Some of the worst people in the world are the ones that leak a celebrity's phone number.
Or other things.
But those are the worst people in the world. You can say what you want on social media. It's there. It's a platform. You're anonymous. You can say what you want, and they can ignore it.
I mean, even the idea that the inclination is to go to some of the nasty places that we
know,
do sometimes.
But I'm saying it's there. It's going to happen. We all know it. But when you leak someone's phone number, you're one of the worst people in the world.
Ooh, this is all right. I'm being baited in. Sorry. your take. I understood what you were saying, and then I looked at the text line, and then I saw another Eli take, and I almost got pulled in. It's great sports radio though, because it gets the people going.
Is it?
It gets the people going. However, I just didn't want to have it. He is one of the names within the 16 first time names within the 167 player pool of modern era players that are available to go into the Hall of Fame. But that amongst all the other things, is around the NFL here in the Loop, Sports Radio 610. Coming up next, let's get into what's popping. The Astros fall in a 4-0 rubber match to the Padres. We'll talk about that and a lot of baseball things surrounding that. Plus, could we possibly get this foot race? We'll talk about all that next.
The biggest stories in sports and entertainment. Sports Radio 610 style. In the Loop presents What's Poppin'.
You know what? I've changed my tune. It's What's Poppin' in the Loop Sports Radio 610. Go ahead. Not only will Eli Manning go into Hall of Fame, I want him to go into Hall of Fame. First time. First ballot.
First ballot.
You want to know why? So we can stop having the conversation.
Oh, yeah. That's true.
I got baited into the conversation
myself.
We were
myself talking about
here.
It off air.
I wasn't even trying to. I wasn't even trying to, and here I am.
First thing I thought of when I saw his name. Brace yourself.
I got the Pro Football Reference page up in front of me and everything. I'm out here giving takes. I don't want to give takes right now, not in the breaks. All right, let's talk about...
He was looking at advanced stats, man. He was looking...
I had to remind myself. I hadn't had the argument in a little while, which was a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like that is a metric of happiness in a sports fan's life in America. How long has it been since you've thought about whether or not Eli Manning should be in the Hall of Fame? And I feel like I've ruined it for all you fine folks. My bad.
Actually, I ruined it. I was the brace yourself guy. I was like, here we go.
Excellent. It's Lopez's fault, not mine. All right. What's popping in Houston? Unfortunately, the Astros fall 4-0 against the Padres mm-hmm. in the rubber match. Although, again, another fun baseball game because this, as we talked about going in, this was one of those pitching matchups. You had a battle of reasonably described aces mm-hmm. between Framber Valdez and Dylan Cease. And Dylan Cease was dealing.
We talked about it yesterday. It's going to be a good matchup.
And it was. It sure was. I mean... I think Joe Espada after the game, and I believe this is, where's my cut here, as I decided late to come to it, but Joe Espada here in cut one here, after the game, like, all you can do is tip your hat to a guy like Cease.
Got to tip your hat to Cease. He was really good. Even from that first pitch of the game, the diving play by Machado, we hit some balls hard. You know, Yordan hit a ball hard. Diaz, you know, he was just really good.
He was, and... you know, overall with the Astros, I realized, you know, after this game, and by the way, any confession before confessions, I did not stay up the entire time.
What?
I did not. I was just like, enough's enough. I got to go to bed. But, you know, recapping it and watching the highlights this morning, I kind of reached the point of like, let's just get on with it. You know, like the Astros win, we can talk about certain things. They have a crazy game like they did. What's today? Wednesday, Tuesday night, when we did. Last night they lose, and I'm like, let's just go get on to the good stuff. Let's get it, because this loss doesn't really affect anything. And you mentioned this, like they're gonna make the playoffs. They're not gonna get the top seeds, and yet they lost. So it's like, let's just get on to the postseason here. I will say. The discussion that we should have now, and Sean Pendergast asked us this morning, you know, would you rather face the Twins or the Tigers?
Yeah. And you're starting to get a little bit of a feel for that. Mm-hmm. When it comes to the Astros, just cleaning things up.
Mm-hmm.
Next game is tonight as they welcome in the Los Angeles Angels. It'll be our favorite guy, your guy, our guy that the Astros acquired during the course of the season. You say,
Kikuchi. Our guy.
We'll be on the mound. He's been really fun, and you have another opportunity.
I love Kikuchi.
That's right.
Yep.
That's right. We love seeing him, and so he'll be on the mound. It's the Angels, man. How much do you feel that's going to matter in a big way? But the magic number still goes down. That somehow it goes down to six because the Mariners last night, which is the game that I flipped over to after the earlier game that happened with the Padres, extra innings of effort and went to the 10th. And in large part because apparently the Mariners just really can't run the bases at all. This happened with Julio Rodriguez was at third in extras. Obviously, he was the, the ghost runner or whatever we call that in this instance. And so he was at third. He was threatening two outs, and a bat flies out of the hand of the batter, and it leads to shenanigans.
Runners lead, 2-2. Swing and a miss. And the ball is... J-Rod. Oh, what a happenstance. A Rosarena strikes out. Let's go to the bat. Rodriguez trying to get out of the way. Straight too far off of third. And then the quick throw to Chisholm for the double play.
He did stray too far off of third, but it was total brain lock.
Well, yeah, he had a very large hunk of wood,
and then he just hung around and near
flying
the,
at his head at a high speed. Yeah, man, he was like, hey, man, he took a second to evaluate. You know what he did? He did the self check. He's like, all right, head, yeah, all right, we're good there. Body.
Oh, bleep, I got
to
get on.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I'm supposed to be somewhere. Too late. Catch
that's the brain lock part. That's the brain. I don't doubt. I'd have probably, you know, soiled myself, you know, with the bat coming at me like that. But then you have to snap. And he was just kind of like, man, did y'all see that? It was, and that's what it was like. Did y'all see that? Yeah. All of a sudden, oh, wow, I'm still playing.
It's funny. The third base coach was like, baseman. Hey!
Man, I got to make sure I'm whole first before I get back.
Hey, the Mariners need to just pack it up, man. It's over, man.
Yeah, man. Yeah. Man. They're
ready for Cabo.
They are. They got the golf clubs in the trunk of their car.
Yeah.
Yep. Again, like I said, six games is the magic number. Mm-hmm. And if you're unfamiliar with the concept of the magic number, that is whether it's Astros wins, Mariners losses, those things add up to six. Once we get to zero on the magic number, the Astros are officially booked for their path to the playoffs, where they might meet the Twins, Minnesota Twins, or they might meet the Detroit Tigers. Fighting AJ Hinches have been on fire since August 22nd.
They came out of nowhere. Yeah.
18-8.
Yeah.
You hear me? 18-8 over essentially the last month of baseball, and they're now just a half game back from that third AL wildcard spot, which is the spot that I believe the Astros will have to face off against in a wild card situation.
And so, would you rather face the Twins or the Tigers? Part of me would rather face the Tigers, even though they're incredibly hot at the right time. I just think the Astros are flat out better, you know. But it is AJ Hinch. The narrative of the 2017 Astros is going to pop back up, and we're going to have to regurgitate all that stuff again. And they're hot. We'll see. Who would you rather face?
Wait, are you a radio guy, formerly a writer, that's afraid of a narrative?
I'm not afraid of it. I'm tired of it.
Okay.
Like the Eli right. thing. Okay, let me say that again. If they face the Tigers, brace yourself.
No, I think I'm on the Twins, and it might not. I mean, well, I was about to say, it's like it might not be as much baseball inspired, but again, I will read this stat one more time. Tigers since August 22nd, 18-8. Yeah. Like that is a very hot span of baseball, and one of the things that is one of those things that you just say, whether or not it's like fully true or not.
That is
you don't want. I mean, the if you're playing hot baseball, if you're playing hot baseball towards the end of the season, mm-hmm. that's what you want. And that is the type of team that I don't want to see. There's a level of belief that you begin to have from a team like the Tigers, where you're like, hey, man, we can go and knock off anyone, and that anyone in this instance would be your Houston Astros. I'm not sure if that's the way I'd want to be. I'd rather go the other way there. All right, let's talk about. We can go one of two ways. I'll let you pick your poison here, Lopez. Do you want to talk about?
Give me some Mel Kiper.
All right,
give me some Mel Kiper.
So two high safeties has become like kind of a defensive staple now against these offenses that are so high powered, and it's really served to limit that in some ways. We talked about it with Patrick Mahomes. We talked about it a little bit in various different places about the ways that hey. The big plays, we're trying to take those away. We're playing these safeties really deep and taking that away. Mm-hmm. And I guess with the downturn in offense, Mel Kiper said, we need to stop this.
I grew up with John Unitas, Fran Tarkington, Ken Stabler, Daryl LaMonica. You know, you talk about quarterbacks, Joe Namath. It was just right. Brett Favre when he was doing what he did. Burt Jones with the Baltimore Colts.
Bert
you think about
Jones.
Those quarterbacks who would throw the ball down the field. I said what Bradshaw did was Stallworth and Swan, Roger Staubach. That's what I want to see brought back. Say, well, you can't do that, right? Well, you got a 5-yard rule with the quarterbacks, right? The Mel Blunt rule, right? Now with the push thing with Hurts, you got to be a yard back now. So don't tell me you can't have those safeties closer to the line of scrimmage than they are. I was at games where I'm thinking, hey, too high? They're out in outer space. Two, I couldn't even find us. So they're playing with nine guys, right? Where are the other two? Oh, the other two? They're so daggone far back, and even though they're part of damn play. I'm telling you, we got to change this thing, and we got to have, hey, you can warn them. Enough radio. They come up. Hey, guys, you got to get up a little bit, right? You're too far back. Warn those safeties, but you got to figure out, competition committee, somebody, Dano, somebody's got to figure out what that depth is, but it's too far back right now. The NFL is being ruined by these too high safeties.
He brought up every name.
That was a great delivery.
The only thing he forgot to say was back in my day.
Yeah.
That was a great delivery.
That's all he had to say, back in my day.
I mean, when it just comes to like a sports take, incredible delivery. He's not wrong in the idea that you could do it, right? Like, I think there's some people that their immediate dismissal of this is like, oh, man, well, I mean, you can do that. You absolutely could, right? Think of, obviously, the shift in baseball. And obviously, he mentioned one that is one of those things that you can put parameters as rules. My thing about it is, why? Right? Like, I understand the idea, hey, let's try and juice offense. Offense is there. Plus, I imagine that you might have a revolt on your hand. Jimmy Ward might go and punch him in his chest.
That's the thing.
Jimmy Ward on Texans All Access this week was talking about the ways in which it feels like that all the rules are catered towards the offense, and there's just no one helping the defense out. Now you're going to tell the defense, hey, man, we're gonna make it so that teams can run deep on you.
Look.
You have no recourse.
This, to me, what gets me on this is... First of all, he's Johnny Unitas, and I mean, there's, you know, Fran Tarkenton. I'm like,
I grew up with John Unitas, Fran Tarkenton.
Back when notoriously the league was the most pass heavy than it's ever been.
Clearly
now we have become a slogging offensive system where nobody wants to see the offenses play.
That's the first thing that got me. The second thing is it will never, ever, ever happen. You have safeties on the field. There's going to be two of them more times than not. And when you're saying you can't line up, what? Let's say he says more than 8 yards behind the line of scrimmage.
Oh, no, that'd be really – you're talking about linebackers then, Lopez. We're talking about maybe 25, 30 yards, I'm guessing.
No, they're at 25 and 30 now. Like right now,
20 then?
Yeah, maybe 8 to 10 to 12 yards. When you're doing that, you're actually telling teams how to coach.
Yeah.
You're telling them how to coach. It's one thing like, you can't have the shift, because that is like on the base pass, you know, where you line up on the field before you play defense. No, you're telling the NFL how to play defense. It's never going to happen.
I think it would be pre-snap. I think it would still be a pre-snap situation, but maybe, I'm with you there. Yeah. I don't think. And I, the thing that I think is fun about it is that all of these things are cyclical, like most things, right? We talk about fashion being cyclical. There's a lot of different situations in life that end up being cyclical. This is going to be another element of sports that's cyclical, and we're starting to see that. It's one of the things we talked about earlier in the week, the idea of, hey, man, could the running game become more prevalent? Because when these players become smaller and faster in order to try and affect the passing game, then you go, hey, we see an advantage that is now being created in this market. Now we get bigger. Now we run into your chest until then you decide to get bigger and maybe a little bit slower. And then we'll go back the other way again, right? The pendulum shifts. And I think that's the natural progression as opposed to putting your thumb on the scale. I also just love the idea. When was the last time that Mel Kiper actually went and watched some old school football? Because when you do that, you go, hey, man, this game's a little more boring than I remember.
Yeah, I was just going to say the last thing on this, and get ready to play it again, because as much as I think it's comical, there is nothing like a Mel Kiper rant. There ain't nothing.
His
like
voice also helps. He's got a cartoony voice.
I don't
voice.
Know what it is. It's like
I grew up with John Unitas, Fran Tarkenton, Ken Stabler, Daryl LaMonica. Yo, you talk about quarter.
He sounds like an old broadcaster from the 70s.
Yes, 60s there's and nothing 70s. Like it in the world. And
well, he is saying names from the 60s and 70s, so that's probably why that
exactly.
happens. Shout out to Mel Kiper for at least giving it just a great take. I think he had all the, he just gave you names, things that brought you back to the place. He got really animated. He ran it back. I know, because ESPN.
Yeah, he did it again today.
They were like, hey, man, let's bring him on to get some more of that. He dialed it right back up. You saw him, like, I thought I saw a vein popping out of his forehead. There might have been a little bit of spittle that came out of his mouth.
Yeah
man. Shout out to Mel Kiper, just giving you a good take, even though I don't think it's a good one when it comes to the content of it. But there you go. A little bit of what's popping here in the Loop Sports Radio 610. Coming up next, a lot of the folks in the Texans organization talked yesterday. We had heard D'Amico Ryans. We heard C.J. Stroud. And both of them had things to say about this Vikings defense. I want to break that down next.